Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 153. Today, the amateur traveler goes to the Faroe Islands. You might be surprised what's on the cuisine there and who has named this the best island destination. Today, in the amateur traveler. Welcome to the amateur traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I'm going to skip the news segment of this particular show because I'm recording two shows back to back because of a trip that I'm doing to New York and Boston. So instead of the usual news that we would find here, we're going to jump right in to today's interview. I'd like to welcome to the show Russell from Baton Rouge, who's come to talk to us about the Faroe Islands. Russell, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
Now, we debated a little saying whether you're from Baton Rouge. You're a student in Baton Rouge and originally from Florida. And that actually is also the connection, as I understand, to the Faroe Islands, with what led you to the Faroe Islands.
That's right. Yeah, the Faroe Islands is one of the two field sites that I'm using for my dissertation research.
And what is your dissertation on?
I'm looking at local food production on small islands.
Okay.
So I've picked one set of islands in the north, the Faroes, and then one set in the south, which is in the Caribbean. And I'm looking at ways that the island communities can sort of avoid falling into the trap of relying completely on imports for their food and can use the resources they have locally to produce their own food.
Very interesting. Now, you have to pack differently, I'm assuming, for those two islands.
I do, but this time, actually, I went directly from one to the other, and so I did have to pack everything in one bag.
Let's tell people where the Faroe Islands are. I had to Google this one and find out where they were.
Yeah, they're not very well known. If you draw a triangle from Iceland to Norway to Scotland and look in the middle of the triangle, you'll find the Faroe Islands.
Are they an independent country or are they part of something else?
They are semi-independent.
Okay.
They're part of Denmark. I like to compare it to the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States.
Okay.
And I know that some more politically savvy people might find some way to disagree with the specifics of that, but several things are similar. They have a different language than Denmark, just as Puerto Rico has a different language than the United States.
Okay.
They make some of their own rules, and some of the rules are made for them by the mother country, which in their case is Denmark.
If I'm not working on a doctoral dissertation, which seems fairly likely, why would I go to the Faroe Islands?
It's a beautiful place, first of all. The outdoor scenery and also the architecture, the man-made and the natural scenery, are both just amazingly beautiful, unlike any place that I've ever been before. The people are very friendly, and they're not so used to tourists or even to very many foreigners coming to visit. So your arrival there would be something of a special occasion. The culture there is very interesting. At the same time, it's very globalized, and it's also very centered and very local. They have a lot of national pride. They're quick to point out that they're Faroese and they're not Danish, but they're still connected to the rest of the world. You can fly from mainland Europe, you can fly from England, from Iceland. While I was there, some of my Faroese friends flew down to London for the weekend for a Van Morrison concert. The connections are very good for being as remote as they are.
Now, for those people who aren't looking at the enhanced version of the show that has pictures, you said it's beautiful. Can you describe what type of beauty we're talking about? Because, for instance, both islands you're probably going to are beautiful, but in very different ways, I would suspect.
Oh, yes. It's like night and day. The Faroe Islands, it's very rugged. There are steep cliffs that drop off into the North Atlantic. The North Atlantic itself is often very stormy, very rough, notorious for shipping. The islands themselves are incredibly green, the brightest greens that you'll ever see. Very few trees anywhere, so you can see for a long distance with these sloping islands that drop off into the ocean. Very often you can see the next island from wherever you happen to be standing, so you get the view across the channel or across the fjord. The villages themselves are really interesting. They paint their houses such bright colors. And I think that's probably because the weather is often very gray.
Mm-hmm.
And the sea and the sky are both the same color of gray. They paint their houses these bright colors to sort of stand out. And they grow grass on their roofs. That's something that you don't see very many places.
Right.
So you've got a bright red house with a bright green roof of natural grass. And then a dark gray ocean or a dark gray sky behind it.
The only thing that it reminded me of a little bit would be the Norwegian coast in terms of some of the bright colors and such of the houses and the landscape. As you say, not the lawn on the roof there sort of thing.
Yeah, it does remind me a bit of Norway, except that you're lacking the big mountains and the glaciers
right.
that Norway
sure.
has.
Sure, absolutely. And the trees, of course.
Right.
So if I were to go to the Faroe Islands, first of all, how many islands are we talking about?
There are 18 islands, okay. and 17 of them are inhabited.
And if we were to go for, say, a week or 2 weeks, what would you recommend I do? What's a good itinerary for the Faroes?
Well, you'll fly into one of the smaller islands simply because that was the best place to put an airport. They had to find some place that had enough flat land to put the airport. There are two patches of flat land in the Faroe Islands. One has the runway, and the other has the international soccer stadium.
All right.
You'll fly into a smaller island called Vágar. And you'll have to get from there to probably the capital. Most people travel into Tórshavn at some point, which is the only real city in the Faroe Islands. And it's not much of a city from the perspective of someone coming from Europe or coming from America. There's about 18,000 people that live in Tórshavn.
Okay.
You'll definitely want to spend some time wildlife watching. There are birds galore. Many people will travel to the Faroe Islands to take these tours where you go and look at the birds that live in the cliffs. Puffins, all kinds of seabirds that live in the area that nest there on the cliffs. Other types of sea life, there are whales. You can go on a whale watching trip, or you can simply just take ferries from island to island and hope to see the whales. And although it's not quite wildlife, there are sheep that run basically wild throughout the islands, and then they're gathered up once per year and sheared, and some of them are slaughtered for meat. But you can't miss these incredibly woolly and feral Faroese sheep. So the wildlife, I definitely would recommend. Spend some time in the small villages. Visit Tórshavn, but also get outside of Tórshavn, because the small villages have really retained the old Faroese culture better than the capital, of course, because it's become more linked to the rest of the world.
Now, in Tórshavn would be Tor's port, I think would be the translation of that. So it's a port city, obviously, and has a fishing fleet, or what is the economy in the Faroe Islands?
Fishing, definitely, okay. Over 95% of the country's exports are fish. And you're right, Tórshavn is named after the Norse god Thor.
Okay, Thor's port. Okay, Thor's haven.
Thor's harbor, Thor's haven, exactly. You should travel by helicopter. There's a helicopter service in the Faroes that is subsidized by the government, and so it's not very expensive.
How much is not very expensive?
Well, the last time I checked the prices, the cheapest flight you could take was about $10 US.
Oh my, wow, that's really cheap.
And it's really short because the islands are so close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anywhere else that you can even take a ride in a helicopter and see that kind of scenery for that cheap. Basically, there are two different ways to get from island to island. Three ways. You can take a tunnel and you'll be driving in a car or riding in a bus. Many of the islands are linked under the fjords with tunnels. Or you can go with the more traditional ferries that cross the fjords, or you can take the helicopter. And the helicopter is by far the most fun. There's one more thing I would definitely recommend trying to see, and it's the main subject of my research, which is whaling. And I know that whaling carries with it a lot of controversial connotations, but they do still whale in a traditional way in the Faroe Islands. It doesn't happen out to sea like the old commercial whalers would do.
Mm-hmm.
They actually drive an entire school of whales into a harbor.
Hmm.
The whales are killed right there on the beach. It's not something for the faint-hearted. But it would be a truly quintessential Faroese experience to get to watch this whaling.
Interesting. I normally ask what the guidebooks recommend. Are there guidebooks of the Faroe Islands? Let's start with that.
There are. I did a little search on Amazon to see what guidebooks existed. I carry with me the Brat Guide, which is a British guidebook. It's pretty good. There's a second edition out now, which I haven't had a chance to check out, but the first edition was very good, and I suspect the second would be as well. There is no other dedicated Faroe Islands guidebook, but the Faroes are included in several of the Lonely Planet series.
Okay.
They're in Scandinavian Europe. They're in an old version of the Iceland guidebook, and I believe they're in the Denmark guidebook now.
What do they recommend that you disagree with? You wouldn't spend time doing that, and what do they miss?
Well, I think that some of the organized tours are a bit of a waste of time, simply because you can see the same things if you go on your own, and you can usually do it without being around the package tourism type of travel, which I think most of your listeners do try to avoid.
Am I getting around by renting a car, by the helicopter, public transportation? What would you recommend?
I've always relied on two things, public transportation and hitchhiking.
Okay.
Not sure if you can recommend hitchhiking on your podcast, but it's certainly been very reliable and very safe for me in the Faroes. And the people that I've spoken with who have done it have had the same experience. But if you do want to stay with the public transportation, there are buses and ferries and helicopters that go basically everywhere in the Faroes. There are cars for rent. I've never tried it, but I do know that a lot of people do that. And the new thing seems to be, at least within the last year or so that I've been traveling there, bringing your car with you on the ferry from mainland Europe. A lot of Europeans are starting to come with Land Rovers and camping equipment, caravans, and they're spending a couple of weeks in the Faroes seeing some of the more remote parts of the islands and doing it more on their own, which I think is great. It seems like it would be a very adventurous way to travel through the Faroes.
And so they're doing mostly camping then, you said?
I think so. The ones that I've seen have split their time between camping and staying in guest houses.
Okay.
The simple fact is that there aren't that many guest houses throughout the Faroes. Some of the more the medium-sized villages have them, but if you really want to get off the beaten track, you have to be prepared to at least camp in a tent on your own.
I don't really know the scale of the Faroes. If I stay in Tórshavn, for instance, how far am I from off the beaten track?
Well, you can get into the wilderness just by walking out of Tórshavn.
Okay.
You can certainly get to a place where it would be okay for you to camp and you wouldn't see a whole lot of urban type living. Now, if you want to get to some of the more remote islands, you're going to have to take a ferry or a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And by boat, it would be a couple of hours. Of course, a helicopter can zip you there much quicker. But the southernmost island is probably the most remote place that you can get to in the Faroes. It's called Suðuroy, and it's very separated, not just by a deep water channel, but by something of a cultural difference, too. The people there are very proud to be from the southern island, and they tell me, I don't understand the language well enough, but they tell me that their language in Suðuroy is different from the language in the rest of the Faroes. So if you wanted to visit Suðuroy, which I would definitely recommend, it's beautiful and very unique, you would have to spend some time on public transit, because the only way to get there is either sailing on or flying over the ocean.
And in terms of language, you're able to get around and you don't speak Faroese?
No, I mean, I know the basics, thank you and hello and those things.
And how similar are those to Danish? Tak is thank you or?
Yeah, tak would work for thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone there speaks Danish.
Okay.
And most people there speak English. So it's never been a problem for me to get by. When I've been interviewing some of the old farmers or old whalers, I've needed to rely on a translator.
Okay.
But just for typical day-to-day getting around as a traveler, there's never been a time when English wasn't sufficient.
And you mentioned guest houses. Where would you recommend to stay?
There are guest houses in most of the medium to larger villages. Tórshavn has some very nice hotels, which I've never stayed in, but I've been in. And they looked on par with anything you would find in a European or American capital. There are a few youth hostels here and there, and there are also some campgrounds. Now, even though this is considered part of Scandinavia, they don't have the freedom to roam, the so-called allemansrätt, that they have in other countries where it's considered your right to be able to camp wherever you want. It's definitely part of the local custom to get permission from the landowner before you decide to camp anywhere, if it's private property.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I've never been told that I couldn't camp somewhere.
In Scandinavia right now, especially for those of us spending U.S. dollars, fairly expensive. Faroe Islands very similar?
Yes, and maybe even more so because they rely so heavily on imports.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not only paying for the product, but you're paying for the cost of getting it to the Faroe Islands.
Sure.
And eating out then similarly expensive?
Yes, I tend to do a lot of my own cooking.
Okay.
Or I've made friends now since I've been going for the past few years, and so I can eat with them in their homes. But if I was relying completely on restaurants, I think I would run through my research funds pretty quickly.
Okay. Now, you are on research funds, and we would probably guess not overpaid. So any tricks to saving money in the Faroe Islands besides making friends really quickly?
Yeah, well, make friends for sure, and try to make it more of a nature visit than a city visit.
Okay.
There's not much for cities anyway. Even, you know, as I said, Tórshavn has such a small population, and it doesn't cost anything to hike and to camp. And to just really see the Faroe Islands on their natural side. Go grocery shopping, take your food with you, bring a little stove if you can, and just try to make it more of a back-to-nature type trip.
Okay. Biggest surprise you've had in the Faroe Islands?
Surfing.
Surfing, okay.
Not
we're talking wetsuits and...
Yeah, I wore the thickest wetsuit I've ever put on. Remember, I'm from Florida where I scuba dive with no wetsuit on. The water was absolutely freezing, but I actually did get a chance to go surfing there. There's a very small group of local Faroese people that are trying to get into surfing, and basically they're in the process now of searching for good surf breaks all around the Faroes.
Interesting.
I got a chance to go with a couple of these guys and try out a couple of their surf spots, and it was one of the most amazing things I've done. With the Scandinavian scenery all around me, these sharp cliffs that just drop off into the North Atlantic, and the North Atlantic itself being as rough and as cold as it is, and I'm in there with a surfboard doing something that I do back home where it's warm. It was an unbelievable experience.
Best day you've had in the Faroe Islands?
It would have to be a toss-up between some of the festivals that I've been to and the day that I spent surfing. The Faroe Islands are known for their festivals. They really know how to have a good time. It seems like they'll celebrate anything. So there was a man from a small island in the Faroes called Nólsoy, and his name was Paul, so they call him Nólsoy Paul. And he's famous because he rowed a boat by himself from the Faroe Islands to Denmark. And unfortunately, soon after he did this, he died. So the Faroese have established a holiday and a festival in his honor. This festival happens on his home island, Nólsoy, which is a very small island just off the coast of Tórshavn, the capital. You can see it from the city. So for the festival, everyone sails over either in a ferry or a private boat to Nólsoy, and they have rowing races, they have regattas, sailing races, and then they just have a lot of music and food and dancing, and everyone stays up all night and has a great time. And I think it's so much different from festivals that I've been to in the United States, simply because it's on such a small scale, everyone knows each other. Even the people in the band know everyone who's in the audience. And so there's so much just friendly interaction going on. You stay up and you just have a great time, and it's probably one of the things that you don't want to miss when you're in the Faroes. You should certainly plan a trip to coincide with one of their many festivals.
Interesting. You mentioned they had food. What is Faroese food? You mentioned sheep before.
They do eat a lot of sheep. One of the favorite ways to eat sheep is dried. They'll take the entire leg and hang it out to where the wind will blow on it until it dries. And it acquires quite a unique taste in this process. It's not much like beef jerky, which is what I thought it might taste like.
Okay.
It's definitely got its own flavor. I think it just picks up something from the salty air that's blowing on it.
Now, you said unique. You didn't say wonderful.
Yeah, I'm still trying to acquire...
Okay.
A taste for a lot of the Faroese specialties, especially, I guess, what's considered the national dish, which is pilot whale meat and blubber.
Okay.
They eat them together. It's definitely one of the most strange and exotic things that I've ever eaten.
Hmm. What do you wish you'd known before you went?
I think that I wish I would have known a little bit more about the Faroese culture. There are several things that came unexpected, and it wasn't bad. I never had any big problems. It was just sort of the thing that happens when you're traveling and you encounter a cultural item that you weren't expecting that just sort of makes you perk up and say, huh, this is really different. One would be that Sundays mean that everything is closed.
Mm-hmm.
The Faroese culture is fairly conservative, fairly religious by Scandinavian standards especially, but I really wasn't expecting to have literally all services closed, but not just that, to have all the people basically close down, take a day off, take a day of rest, which I guess is what Sunday was intended for from the beginning. But I've never really seen that put into practice as I did in the Faroes. It was nice, but I wasn't necessarily ready for it. Another thing would be just sort of the Scandinavian social customs, which stereotypically Scandinavians are hard to really get to know. I didn't find that so much in the Faroes. People are very warm and very open, but you just have to know that it's not America and it's not Europe. It's its own place, and it's an old Viking culture that still retains a lot of that Viking brusqueness and Viking self-sufficiency that is what helped them to survive from the time that the islands were first settled. But to run into that sort of a culture or an attitude in the 21st century, it's not bad. It's just something that you don't see very often.
The most memorable person you met?
I would have to say it was a whaler that I spoke with. I actually met him at the Nolsoy Paul Festival, and he was the first person who offered me whale meat in the whole time that I spent in the Faroes. And the funniest thing was he was not much older than me. I'm 31, and he didn't look like he was out of his 30s, which was unusual because you picture whalers to be, you know, gruff old Captain Ahab. And this was certainly not the case. He was a young guy, clean shaven, had both legs. And then he went into the cabin of his boat and pulled out a big chunk of whale meat and blubber that he had caught and killed and processed himself, and cut off a big chunk of it and handed it to me as kind of a gesture of friendship. Welcome to the Faroes. Welcome to the festival. Have some whale meat.
If I were planning a trip to the Faroes, you mentioned a couple different guidebooks. What other resources do you use to plan the trip?
The internet's pretty good. There are several Faroe Islands tourism sites that you can get to simply by Googling Faroe Islands. I'd get in touch with someone there. The Faroese, most of them are connected to the internet through any type of social networking websites, couch surfing, any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You should be able to get a hold of local people. And it's been my experience that anyone that I've asked for help or advice has been more than happy to give it. So try to get some one-on-one communication before you go. One thing that could potentially draw more tourists to the Faroes in the near future is that the Faroe Islands were actually chosen number one in National Geographic Traveler's Island Survey.
Interesting.
The best island destination, which totally surprised me because you would think it would be someplace warm. Mm-hmm. You know? But no, the Faroe Islands, even as far north as they are, they beat out all the tropical destinations as the number one island place. And this is being promoted a bit by the Tourism Bureau of the Faroes. I've got in my hand right now a map that I picked up this summer, and there's a really small icon down in the corner that says Faroe Islands top rating in National Geographic Survey. But it's certainly not overblown. It's just sort of an understated accomplishment that they've made. But I do think that now that there's starting to be more press and more publicity about the Faroes, that you'll probably see more tourism, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But if you want to get to a place before other people get there, go sooner than later.
Interesting. If you had to summarize the Faroe Islands in just three words, what three words would you use?
Let's see. I think I would have to go with sheep, ocean, and Vikings.
Sheep, ocean, and Vikings. All right.
Because there's no place you can go in the Faroes that you won't see sheep and ocean. And you're probably going to run into some Vikings, or at least the descendants of some Vikings.
Russell, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about this place that I had never really heard of.
My pleasure.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that's a new tool from Hotels.com called the Visual DNA, or the Hotels.com Visualizer. And basically what it does is it gives you a series of questions, where you're visiting, city or beach, for instance, and what you like to spend your time doing, and it's all pictorial. And so it's a picture of somebody hiking or somebody getting a massage, and you pick the one that best matches you, and this style of room suits me. And then basically after you've chosen a series of things with what kind of hotel looks like you, what kind of restaurant looks like you, what kind of outing looks like you, you, then it will show you hotels that it thinks matches what you're looking for. Interesting. I think you'll find it worth trying out. The link to that is a little complicated, so it's best to just go to the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In news from the community, I got a letter from Ira, who said, "This is just a note to tell you how much I enjoy the show. I particularly like its technical quality as I listen through my car radio. Although I have a good quality car stereo, the noise from the street is simply unavoidable, so the generally high level of clarity is very much appreciated." Well, Ira, I'm glad you're appreciating that. And here's a little trick for you. This particular show, for instance, is one of the places where I use that. When I do a telephone call, it's actually harder to hear than is evident from this particular episode. What I did is I put a band pass filter on it for all of you aspiring podcasters. It makes the sound a little more narrow. It's not as rich, but it makes it much more clear. And what I'm going for is to make sure that you can understand the words that are being said. And I hope that that helps. And then I got a comment on the show on Tokyo from Christy that said, "Two things I learned before I went to Tokyo 17 years ago that may still be relevant. One, don't take the taxi from Narita to the city. It's very far away. Take the train. And two, the beef is expensive." That's a really good point. In terms of taxis far away, that's something I've often found at airports. Before you fly into someplace, make sure you know how far it is to the main city, because some, for instance, are an hour by train away. I think of some of the London airports, or the airport of Milan, for instance, are also, and apparently also then the airport for Tokyo. So a good tip from Christy. If you have any tips, questions, or comments, feel free to comment on the episode as Christy did, or drop me an email as Ira did at host@amateurtraveler.com. And with that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. Remember, we are still looking for sponsors. We're just getting started with that as I start with a new hosting provider. And also, don't forget to vote for the Amateur Traveler in the Podcast Awards, the annual Podcast Awards, which can be found at podcastawards.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.